White Rocket Entertainment.
From the cradle to the grave, football borders on religion in the state of Alabama. This timeless phenomenon solidified some 70 years ago. It was during the Depression of 1929 and on into the 30s when the hopeless Alabama citizens looked with pride towards the great Crimson Tide teams. In this era, Wallace Wade and Frank Thomas won 4 national championships, soothing the desperate times. When America rebounded, Alabama football continued to be the toast of the upper crust. The state's doctors, lawyers, and bankers sent their children on to Tuscaloosa to be educated. Auburn University was an agricultural and engineering school, attracting the state's middle class. Auburn always felt it was being shunned by the University of Alabama followers, and Auburn knew the one place to gain respect from Tuscaloosa was on the football field. For the past 40 years, these social wars have been settled on a battleground in Birmingham. These two teams have met on the last weekend of their seasons to settle 364 days of impassioned arguments over who has the better team and the better way of life. When Alabama and Auburn play, the goal is to win, but the fear is of losing and having to tolerate your arch-rival fans and their incessant torture for an entire year. Said it would never happen. Today it will happen. Second-ranked Alabama against 11th-ranked Auburn. In Auburn for the first time ever.
Here's Reynolds Wolf.
Oh gosh. First time that the Iron Bowl was at the Plains. Couldn't believe it. Remember being there. Was a freshman at Jacksonville State University, was with a buddy of mine named Kyle McCray. Kyle and I were there in the stadium and just thinking, dude, this is real. This is happening.
This is We Believed, a lifetime in the Auburn family. Part 4. The Last Brick in Our Wall. Pat Dye, 1989 through 1992.
This was Jim Nantz of CBS Sports in 1989.
A full spectrum of football heroes, from Bear Bryant to Bo Jackson, have been a part of this glorious series, yet many of them never would have believed that this game would one day shift to this site. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Jim Nantz, and welcome to the Southern Plains of Alabama, where for the first time ever, the Alabama Crimson Tide comes in to challenge the Auburn Tigers. Clearly today, the objective for these teams is to win the state title, but there is certainly much more at stake than just that. In fact, by the end of the day, the Southeastern Conference title will be finalized, as will the conference representative in the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans. Now, Alabama can win the conference outright and go into New Orleans undefeated with a victory today. However, Auburn could spoil those plans, and we could even see a three-way tie by the end of the day if Tennessee can claim victory against Vanderbilt. Now, the national championship picture is also in focus here. The Crimson Tide ranks second in the country, however, obviously needing a victory today to keep any hopes at all alive of winning the national championship. Now, yesterday, Alabama made its first journey ever from Tuscaloosa to Auburn, and many of the fans tagged along. They went through the towns of Centerville and Maplesville. They all came. 160 miles they traveled to a new world. Meanwhile, here at Auburn, all week it's been a celebration.
Here's Jerry Hinnon.
Being, 11 at the time, I didn't understand the full significance of that game. I didn't understand that playing in Legion Field every year was this kind of slap in the face to Auburn, or at least was to a lot of perfectly sensible Auburn people, that this had been such a sticking point that the game just wasn't played in Auburn, and that was how it was supposed to be until 1989. I didn't understand how cathartic that game was at the time, but, that's the nice thing about growing up is you can read things and learn things. And now, obviously, I kind of think about that as the culmination of the Dye years, that maybe Auburn never won the national championship, obviously should have in 1983, which is another season, unfortunately, I don't remember. But in some ways, they kept winning big games. They kept going to Sugar Bowls and finally kind of built up, I think, to a game that sort of really changed the dynamic of Auburn football from everything that came before to everything that came after. I think the game, even if I didn't understand its importance at the time, I think I'm not overstating its importance when I say, you know, looking back at it and from everything I've read and, you know, remember watching the game as well. This is not to say I don't remember watching the game. I did. My parents went to it. I stayed home and saw it on TV. But beating an undefeated Alabama team, you know, fairly comfortably from what I remember at home, it was a seismic event. And I think to say that was the culmination of the Dye years is, I don't think it's overstating it.
Reggie Slack needing 5 yards on third down. He's going to throw long to Alexander Wright. Oh, a great catch over the shoulder inside the 10, down to the 7-yard line as he beat Ephraim Thomas, who made the tackle down at the 7. Reggie Slack threw a beautiful pass, and Wright took it over his left shoulder as he raced down that eastern sideline.
Reggie Slack came up to the line on a 3rd and 5. He saw that Alabama was playing man-to-man in the secondary. They were in a blitz situation. They had Keith McCants coming toward the quarterback. Auburn's offensive line needs the credit.
I don't need to tell you the magnitude of this Lyle field goal. 34 yards. Angle to the left. The ball will be placed down on the near side hash mark by Dickinson. There's the kick. Kick is away. Kick is good! Auburn 30, Alabama 20. 33 seconds to go. Let the celebrating begin. 2 seconds, 1 second.
All right, so where we left off was with the 1988 team coming so close, another one of these so close, like 1983, so close but not quite, and the frustration that Auburn should have been playing in the Sugar Bowl against Notre Dame in a game for the national championship undefeated, and instead we were playing in the Sugar Bowl against Florida State in a game that was meaningless other than just getting to play Florida State. And by the way, the odd thing about that we didn't address in the previous episode is that Florida State was one of our regular out-of-conference opponents in a number of years in the 80s, but not 88. So we end up playing Florida State more often than not in the 80s because in the years we didn't schedule them, we ended up playing them anyway. And then we'd come back and play them an away and home series in 89 and 90, which pretty much capped it off all the way up until 2013. So the 88 season ended, and we knew that we were getting a lot back. We knew we were losing a few things. That 87-88 team was so good, but we lost Tracy Rocker, among other things. The defense still had great talent, but it lost some of that frontline All-American talent it had had in 87 and 88. So what were your expectations going into 1989, and particularly knowing that the capping of that season would be Alabama's first ever visit to Auburn?
Coming off 2 SEC titles in a row, the expectations were high. Yeah. We had a returning quarterback in Reggie Slack. We had lost a lot of talent on defense, but we had a lot coming back. We had Quentin Riggins and Craig Ogletree and David Rocker and some other guys, and we had James Joseph and Stacey Danley back at running back and a few good players on the offensive line, Ed King, Rob Selby, a couple other guys. And so the schedule had some tough spots on it. We had to play some tough road games. But knowing that we were getting Alabama at home for the first time ever was huge. And it made you think about the season in a different way because you didn't just know that was the end. You look forward to it. And it made you want to be – have the team peaking for that game in Auburn. And so I think, you know, there was a lot of expectation and a lot of confidence going into that season, you know, knowing that we had a good team. There was a tough schedule. We played a lot of tough teams, some on the road. But knowing that we had a good team and we were going to be competitive.
You know, here's the interesting factoid about that. What team scored the most points on this Auburn defense in 89 all season?
Tennessee? Louisiana Tech.
Louisiana Tech. And it's very similar to North Carolina scoring, I think, the most points on us the year before, which is that it's one of those games where we were kind of looking past them and probably playing the backups a lot, resting up to go to Georgia the next week. And so, yeah, and the interesting thing, I mean, the character of that 89 team was revealed over the course of September through December. I mean, I honestly can't remember any other season. And I think Pat Dye even mentions this in the locker room, basically. He talks about it in the locker room after the first time ever game with Alabama, which I think I have some audio of.
Tonight's what our program's all about. I want you to think about it and let it sink in deep. This is the reason we work in the summertime in January and February and the spring. This is the reason we push you beyond what you think you can do to experience moments like this. Ain't no easy way in life, and it wasn't easy out there tonight, but you were prepared for the task at hand. Every one of you players, I mean, I ain't smart enough to tell you how I feel about you. I mean, because it's family, every one of you. I mean, you know it. Sure, I'd like to be 11-0 and, you know, not. But I'm going to tell you something. I wouldn't swap this year for any year that I've been at Auburn. I wouldn't swap it, men, because I've watched you struggle and I watched you wrestle with them angels but I watched you grow up and become men.
And, you know, he's saying basically that all season long this team was struggling with itself. It was a very good team. It always had great potential, but it was having trouble putting it all together on a consistent basis in every phase of the game. It was a good team that wanted to be great and could be great, and earlier in the year just couldn't quite come together and gel and get over the hump and whatever other euphemisms you want. And what we can talk for a minute about the two losses that were in the first half of the season that made it. And at one point we were 4-2, and 4-2 is not where we wanted this team to be. But they got their act together after that, and they finished strong. And you can make the argument that they really came together at Georgia on November 18, where they beat Georgia 20-3, and, you know, went on 2 weeks later after a week off to play the first time ever game, and then Ohio State in the Hall of Fame Bowl. But here's why I think that it took them until the Georgia game, because they had that defense, but the offense just wasn't clicking. We lost a good bit of our receiving core from the last few years, you know, those great receivers that we'd had. Several of them had graduated. And we were still, you know, our running game was still okay, but not, you know, what we'd kind of gotten used to in that decade. Stacy Danley and James Joseph were fine. There was nothing at all wrong with them. They just weren't Bo Jackson and Brent Fullwood, you know, and all that, and Brooks and Cribbs and Andrews. They just weren't quite that. And that's not their fault. That's just a fact. And so the offense was having a hard time really getting going. It bit us at Tennessee on September 30th, we can talk about. It meant that we only scored 10 points at home against LSU. Fortunately, we won that game 10-6, and it was kind of an underwhelming revenge game, if I remember correctly.
That sounds like a lot of Auburn-LSU games, though.
Yeah, it does.
10-6.
It meant that we could hold Florida State in their own stadium to 22 and still only score 14. And I think most importantly, it meant that in that November 4th game against number 19 Florida with Emmitt Smith and that great defense, we had to score on basically the next to last play of the game to beat him 10-7.
It's fourth down and 10 with 45 seconds, and the clock is still on the move, and Auburn can't stop it. They can't call time. Fourth down and 10. This could be the last play of the game for Auburn. They trail 7-3. Slack's got one setback and four wide receivers. Desperation play. Slack's going to throw in the end zone. Got a man wide open. Larson, he's got it. Touchdown, Auburn. Touchdown, Auburn. Touchdown, Auburn. Touchdown, Auburn. Slack threw it to Larson. Larson wide open in the end zone. Shane Larson, touchdown, Auburn. Reggie Slack in desperation to heave. And it's an Auburn touchdown. Tigers lead with 26 seconds to go. 9-7. Unbelievable.
And so, you know, you then have the November 11th Louisiana Tech game, 38-23, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, if we're having to struggle this hard to beat Louisiana Tech, how are we going to go to Athens and win against Georgia? And then how do we have any prayer, you know, when Alabama comes home? Because, you know, you and I have talked before about the thing about 89 was it was a whole fall of just gut-wrenching agony, because you kept thinking, we finally got Alabama to come to our stadium, to our town, and they are undefeated. You know,
yes.
We were 4-2, they were like 6-0, and we're like, of all years, why does it have to be this year?
Remember, I kept pointing out Alabama's record in the years leading up to this. They were kind of mediocre, so yeah. We couldn't have had them visit in one of the seasons when they're mediocre. No,
no. And honestly, at the time, it was just gut wrenching. But we, you know, looking back on it now, it just makes it sweeter, doesn't it?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, because that was a serious Alabama team that we beat in the first time ever game. That wasn't like, you know, Ray Perkins 5-16. That was a serious, undefeated, going to play for the national championship at that point, Alabama team. So a couple of games worth noting. We go to Tennessee, and of course, Neyland Stadium with Johnny Majors had been a house of horrors for us for too many years in the 80s. This is the time where it was raining anyway. We call this the blame it on the rain game. It was raining anyway, and then Majors had all of his water sprinklers running all night too, so that the field in Tennessee was just a morass. I think because he felt like, you know, Alexander Wright and our other receivers were a little of an advantage for us. He wanted to slow everybody down and grind it out with Cobb and Webb, right?
Yeah, and Reggie Cobb just destroyed us that day. That was the other games this year, I think you pointed out, we struggled on offense and didn't do enough. This is the game where the defense let us down, and Tennessee just ran all over us. They had some great offensive linemen, and Cobb was next at running back, and they just took it to us in the rain up there.
Yeah, Alexander Wright did have like an 80-yard bomb from Reggie Slack. So we did get one good play like that. I don't have the play-by-play in front of me, but I feel like we didn't score two touchdowns. I feel like maybe it was a touchdown, a two-point conversion, and two field goals or something like that. Tennessee's defense, though, other than that one long play, pretty much kept us under control on offense the whole game, too. So we weren't going to be a great team as long as we were struggling to score 10, 14 points on the likes of Tennessee, LSU, and Florida. I mean, they all had good defenses, but to be above that, to be a real contender, we needed to be able to score more points than that, and that's coming. So October 14th, remember, this was the revenge game. We have LSU at home after they beat us in the earthquake game the year before. We were ranked number 12. We had dropped from fourth after losing to Tennessee and then beating Kentucky. And, I mean, do you have memories of that LSU game in 89? I mean, I have some, but it's for different reasons. We wanted revenge on them, but it kind of was I don't know, maybe it was just me, but it didn't seem like the big thing it should have been.
No, I mean, I think it wasn't the same. It wasn't what we thought it was going to be, I guess, the huge revenge game. I think they were good, but they weren't great that year. They had lost Hodson and some of those other people, I believe, coming back. And we did want revenge. I mean, that was – I wanted to beat them. But their defense was, again, excellent, as it always is. And it was a slugfest. I mean, it was a CBS Auburn-LSU game where the two defenses dominated, and it was 6-3 going down the stretch.
And we had just lost 2 weeks earlier, too, which didn't help. I mean, if we had been undefeated, you know, and it had been like, you know, oh, this is going to help get us to the national championship or something, then maybe it would have been bigger. And it was tough. I mean, I remember James Joseph plunging in for the touchdown that won the game. It was kind of like the previous year reverse in terms of scoring and everything. We got the late touchdown instead of them. But
yes.
But yeah, it just wasn't quite maybe everything we had hoped it would be. It was a sellout. It was a huge crowd and everything. But it just, I don't know. It was on CBS. But yeah, so the next week we go down to Florida State. I'm trying to remember if you made that trip too. A whole bunch of my friends did.
I did not.
Okay, that's right. Because a whole bunch of us went down in several cars together to that game. And I had bronchitis or something. I was feeling miserable. It was a night game on ESPN. It was very foggy. There was just a lot of humidity. It was like a lot of cool humidity in the air, and I was having trouble breathing. The Florida State fans were even more obnoxious than you would even imagine. They had us sitting in the end zone on these, I kid you not, wooden bleachers. My high school, when I was there, had better seats than what Florida State had us sitting on. Because, you know, you think about Florida State, Doak Campbell today, and it's that beautiful brick palace, you know, it looks really nice on the outside. But back then, it was just two decks. It was like a deck on each sideline and then bleachers in the end zone. That was pretty much it in 89. And during the game, one of the bleacher wooden planks that we were all sitting on split in the middle, and the jagged ends came flying straight up and hurt people.
Jeez.
And I also remember that the Florida State marching band marched under us before halftime, and people were dumping drinks on them from up above, which is terrible. We tried to come back. It was very similar to the Florida State game, in the bowl game the year before. We tried to come back, and Reggie Slack on fourth down, bless his heart, he thought he could run for the first down as the clock was running out, and he got tackled short, and we lose 22-14. We'd been down further in that. I think it was like 22-7 at one point, and we thought we were out of the game. So that was depressing. We were now 4-2, and skip ahead to November the 4th. What do you remember about that Florida game, right? That's the Slack to, was it Shane Wasdin?
Shane Wasdin. It was an ESPN night game. And again, just like the Halloween game a couple years earlier, one of the great fun games and home games in Auburn history, like, you know, because it was a night game in ESPN back when that was, you know, still a relatively new phenomenon. And it was a huge crowd. We hated Florida. They had Emmitt Smith. He was all hyped up as this, you know, potential Heisman candidate stuff. And our defense shut him down, held him to less than 100 yards. And I remember, wasn't that the game that some of our friends got into it with the Florida coaches leaving the field?
Gary Darnell, yes.
the you know, the visiting team exit and entrance is in the student section area, and some of our friends got into it with the Florida coaches after the game when they were leaving the field. But Florida's defense was excellent. They had a ton of great talent, and they were really tough. And at the end of the game, we drove down the field, and Reggie Slack hit Shane Wasdin in the end zone. He was kind of falling backwards as he caught the ball, I believe.
Yeah.
And it was a huge moment, and that stadium went absolutely bananas.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, and this was Emmitt Smith's third and last try to beat us. He came up 0-3. You know, you and I have talked before about how if Emmitt had just – he was down to Auburn and Florida for his commitment. If he just committed to Auburn, I feel like we'd have had at least one, if not two, national championships between 87 and 89, because we would have had a, you know, an extra super good piece of that running game to go along with Danley and Joseph. I mean, just imagine, and that passing game. So that 88 team would have been national champions easily if Emmitt Smith had been on the team.
Yes.
I mean, they would have scored 21 points on LSU and not in the earthquake game. There wouldn't have been an earthquake. It would have been us earthquaking, if that's a verb. But, yeah, that the pass to Wasdin. And so that really kind of turned things around. We still weren't scoring very much, but we were proving that they could – that team was proving it could win when it had to. It's back against the wall, it could fight. We talked about Louisiana Tech. And then, like I said, we go to Athens and beat Georgia 20-3. And that's a good score to beat Georgia by, 20-3. I like that. We held them to – the defense was really rolling then. And we have a week off. Yeah.
We always joke about one of the few times in history where we dominated them in the series and dominated them in Athens.
Yeah.
We have this game. We have the – what's his name? The Ronnie Daniels game. But yeah, there's not a lot of other games where we absolutely kicked Georgia's rear end.
That's right. Yeah. I don't remember a lot of the details of that game. I just remember thinking that we finally got it together, right? We finally went out. We scored some points. The defense looked ferocious. Maybe we do have a chance because we're getting our act together about at the right time. And that was, again, what Pat Dye was saying, was this team took a long time to mature and kind of come together. But they waited all the way until the Georgia game to do it to some degree. But they did it. And by the way, I remember being at a Mexican restaurant with my roommates on November 11 after the Louisiana Tech game, and there were some Louisiana Tech fans in there, and I remember saying to them, you guys were really good. I mean, we took you for granted, but that was a good game, 38-23. So, all right, so we have a week off, and I've been looking forward to this, John, because you and I and our friends and loved ones and everybody, we went to this game together, and this was a really special day. Now, I have to tell the story of the day before, okay? December 1st, 1989, is a day that goes down in infamy for me, because I think maybe that day or the day before, my roommates, it's one of two things. We had gone and eaten at a buffet in Opelika, and I had some pine orange banana juice in the refrigerator in our house. It was one or both of those things. I got the worst case of, the worst case of food poisoning, maybe second worst. I've had another case that's pretty bad in more recent years. I got a horrible, horrible case of food poisoning. And all day long on December 1st, Friday, all day long, I was miserable. If you've ever had real food poisoning, you know it just makes every muscle hurts. You can't think. The only thing you can do is run to the bathroom, you know, to be sick again. And so it was horrible. And I was thinking, how am I going to go to the game? I mean, you know, my girlfriend at the time even came all the way down from Sylacauga to make me like chicken soup because I couldn't eat anything. And we were thinking, I don't know how we're going to go to the game. I was terrified, but fortunately, because stuff like that kind of, you know, it's horrible, and then you kind of get over it, you know. So the early morning of December 2nd dawned, and I was okay. And so, and you and your crowd, and we all got together. I remember, I don't remember where we, didn't we meet up somewhere and go to McDonald's for breakfast or something, like 7 o'clock in the morning?
I didn't do that. I feel like we met outside the stadium, maybe, but
well, see, because I remember a bunch of us walking along the concourse from McDonald's direction toward the stadium, because I remember they had a United Way booth there, and I said something funny to the guy that I was talking to at the booth, and I was thinking that you were there too, but maybe that was me and my crowd came along there, and we met you at the stadium. But I remember that you and Denise were there, and my girlfriend and I, and roommates and all that, and like the whole crowd, like Kristen and all them, we were all there together. We had like, Kristen had a big sheet that said CBS, Can Bama Survive? And we hung that in stadium. And we were all there, and because the gates weren't going to open until like 1 o'clock or something, right? So we had to sit there from about 8 a.m. till at least noon.
Yeah, the student section, as always, this was first come, first serve. Yeah. And because it was Alabama and it was the first time ever, we were not going to get bad seats.
No.
We had decided that a long time ago that we were willing to do this. So normally we go, you know, to my parents' tailgate or other tailgates before the game or hang out, watch the earlier games. But we didn't do that. We got to the stadium early and got in line. We brought some playing cards and some, some stuff to sit on the ground or whatever. We just sat on the ground and played cards and hung out all morning until the gates opened, and then we rushed in. We got great seats as a group. There was about 20 of us that were together there in a really good spot in the student section, a couple of rows above the middle walkway area and toward the 30-yard line or whatever, where the furthest the student section goes over.
Yeah, we kind of staked that out as our official position for the next couple of years, because I remember in 1990, you and I sat there like the whole season because we figured out that the Baptist Student Union and the fraternities had a block right there, but like the top two rows above the Baptists but below the walkway was just general admission. Nobody had it. And so we would go and get that very top corner up against the fence to our right and the walkway behind us, and that was great.
Yep. It was good seats, really good view, good location. And so we were there. We knew we were in and we were in good shape. And what I remember is the SGA had put paper orange and blue shakers in every single Auburn seat in the stadium.
Yeah.
And I mean, every seat. They had basically a budget for this kind of stuff, and they had stopped putting out shakers and stuff for the other games in order to save them up for
save
the
them
Alabama
up.
Game purposely.
That's right.
And they put them in basically every seat in the stadium that was an Auburn seat, other than the corner wedge where the Alabama fans were. Mm-hmm. And in the pregame warm-up time, everybody got those shakers out and shook them, and there was this haze.
Purple haze!
From the paper shakers, there was this fog or haze over the crowd and over the stadium because everybody was shaking the shakers so hard before the game.
And they were those paper ones. People don't understand now, but back then we used paper shakers. And so it was the orange and the blue of the paper all just flattering, coming to pieces. And just these little tiny particles were all we've always said, right, we all probably got lung cancer at that game, and it's okay. It was worth it.
100%, and I still have that paper shaker. It's in the attic in my house, and it is a Ziploc bag. So.
Here's Reynolds.
Now, I remember Alabama coming onto the field, and they came through, if memory serves, the south end zone, and they split in two, and they paraded around the sidelines in this weird fashion as though they were giving the middle finger to the Auburn people. So they came into the stadium again. It seemed, if memory serves, in the south end zone, they came up each sideline, and it was like they owned the place. They were giving the middle finger to Jordan-Hare Stadium. And I think it was weird because they had this great quarterback, Hollingsworth, who seemed to do no wrong. And Bill Curry had these guys firing on all cylinders. But there was something about that day and Reggie Slack, two-step drop, laser beam, down the sidelines, getting Alexander Wright. And just I can still see Wright running to this day. And just the eruption. It was a party that started then and never ended.
That was a game where, you know, like you said, we wanted Alabama to come in and not be that good, but they were. They were undefeated and number two in the country. It was a really good Alabama team.
Great defense but that, and everything.
And they had, yeah, they had excellent skill position people. They had great defense. And it was Cornelius Bennett on that defense.
He was on there in 86. I don't remember if he was still there in 89.
Maybe Derek Thomas, maybe.
But they
had some great players. But that was a game where emotionally the Auburn crowd was as ready as they have ever been for a game, and they were not going to be denied.
Yeah.
They were not going to let the team falter, and they were not going to let Alabama come into our stadium and without knowing where they were and how we felt.
You know, you're talking about when we were outside the stadium, you could feel it. That it's funny. The single word I hear most used when people describe this day is electric, and it's true. It's one of those things where if you take the time when you were a kid and there was a particularly really good Christmas where you know that you're going to get this ultra awesome good present you've been wanting, right? Take the anticipation on Christmas Eve when you know that the next day's Christmas is just going to be awesome. You know what I mean? And multiply that times 100. In other words, you've been waiting your whole life to be on an equal footing with those guys from across the state. You know, been going to school with them, dealing with their fans, putting up with them thinking they're better than you, looking down at you, being condescending and arrogant towards you. You've been waiting your whole life to finally stick it to them. And beating them several times in the 80s was great. But this was making the bully come over to your house so you could take a club to him in your living room, right? This is like he has to come to you and take that whooping. And and there's that added tingling of, but he might actually have brought a gun and shoot me in my living room, you know? We don't know. So there was just this incredible electric sense on the surface of the skin and in your mind that this could be the greatest moment we've ever seen as Auburn fans in our lifetime to that point. Or it could be an utter disaster. And it was that Schrodinger's cat, right? You don't know if the cat's alive or dead in the box. It's that floating over the edge of the blade, and you don't know which side of the blade you're going to come down on. It was just this incredible sense. I mean, people were just running around yelling. There were spontaneous war eagles and screaming and all. I mean, maybe they do. I haven't been to Auburn for a home game in a long time because I live away now. I don't know what they do. I don't know what the kids do today. You know what I'm saying? But back then, the students were, we were trying to be very nondescript. We would even, go to home games wearing colors that weren't orange and blue because people would say, you don't look like you're from out of town or something. I mean, we tried to play it cool usually, but there was no playing it cool on December 2nd, 1989. You let your orange and blue Auburn flag fly metaphorically very proudly, and everybody was war eagling. Everybody was yelling and doing spontaneous cheers. I've never before or even since seen anything like that. It just was an absolutely, in terms of an experience as a fan, even being in Arizona in January of 2011 was not quite what this was like. Because this was so personal. Going out to Arizona to play Oregon and win the national championship, that was profoundly important because we had never, you know, in our lifetimes hadn't had that experience. But that was still like a business trip, you know what I mean? In a lot of ways.
Yes, yes.
This was so intensely personal. This was a family affair all the way down. And it's just impossible to put into words what it felt like. You had to be there.
I think you're doing a good job of it. I think normally in the home games, I go to Tiger Walk. Mm-hmm. And we didn't, obviously, because we were at the stadium so early, go to Tiger Walk. But I talked to people, you know, my parents, other people who were at the Tiger Walk afterward, and they said it was the most crowded and intense Tiger Walk that Auburn has ever had. Like, it was really single file for the players because there were so many fans on that street, mm-hmm. you know, that wanted to tell them, you know, how they felt, go kick their ass.
Yeah.
But also, like, the game was a back-and-forth game. And like we said, Alabama was really good that year. Mm-hmm. But the crowd was not going to sit down. Mm-hmm. They weren't going to be quiet. They weren't going to let the team falter. I think that was really important. Like, the crowd was determined to do whatever they could do to lift the team up.
Yeah. Absolutely. The crowd was absolutely determined to insert itself into the drama and be part of it and not just a witness. And we did.
And well, 100%.
What did that game mean to you as an Auburn person, that it took place at all and that we got to be there?
I mean, I think it was a change in the rivalry and how we saw each other.
Yeah.
Where there, you know, there had been, like we joked about earlier, the games in Legion Field was, even, you know, 50-50, and but all the ushers are wearing Alabama hats and stuff. I mean, it was a huge change in how we perceived the rivalry, I think, because we finally felt like we were on even footing. Like, we had been kind of fighting uphill for years, and now we were in a place where we were on an even footing with Alabama. We had a great stadium. We had a great coach. We had a great team. We had a good crowd. And they had to come to our stadium every other year. And we knew that gave us a shot.
Yeah, it did. It changed the whole complexion of things. And it had been building. I mean, it's not like, you know, this was 1982 and Alabama had been winning every year. And then suddenly this happens and changes everything. We built up. We took a decade to build up to the point that, when that finally happened, we were a program that was already on an even keel with them. And this was, in fact, our fourth win in a row over them this year, the 89 game. And I had a question for Reynolds about that. So did that change things? I mean, how did that change us? After that game, we're on a level playing field, right?
Well, we weren't. We should have been on a level playing field, but we weren't. Because you'll remember, The only way they would agree to come to Jordan-Hare Stadium is if we had to play, if memory serves, I think two more times at Legion Field, which was an absolute cesspool. But the idea that we had to go back up there in Graymont Avenue and play those guys there again two more times, are you kidding me? Ugh. But at the end of the day, it was well worth it. And it was Pat Dye, the guy who made it happen. Always be grateful.
And how weird was it seeing Alabama fans on our campus? I mean, people today can't appreciate, because every 2 years you see Alabama fans on our campus. But it was just, there were people that would wear Alabama stuff on Auburn campus all the time. You know, you'd go to class with people that were Alabama fans. That's just, they just happened to be going to school at Auburn or something. But how weird was it to see the Alabama fan base in mass on the Auburn campus for the first time?
It was weird. It was weird to hear their, you know, did they bring their band? I feel like they did.
Yeah, I think so.
To hear their band play in our stadium was really strange. To see their fans, I think the other part was, in their minds, our campus and our stadium were this rinky-dink thing that wasn't worth playing the game there. And I think once they got there and saw the campus and the stadium, then that it kind of changed their perception about it a little bit.
Well, just imagine this. In 1989, Alabama was still playing their big home games in Legion Field. Now, compare Legion Field in 1989 to what Pat Dye had Jordan-Hare looking like in 1989. For one thing, Jordan Hare was bigger than any other stadium in the state at that point. I mean, I don't know if people now realize this, but during the 80s and well into the 90s, Jordan Hare was the biggest stadium in the state of Alabama. And they had the hedges, the flower beds. Everything looked nice and neat. The stadium had just been renovated and expanded with the east upper deck in 87. And so there was no competition. We had the biggest and the nicest stadium. And it just took away any credibility for them saying, oh, we can't go down there. We're too big of a program to go play in that stadium. I mean, it's the biggest stadium in the state. It's bigger and nicer by far than yours, Alabama. You know, you have no more excuse. And I remember seeing on the roof of the – there's a picture of this floating around, and Jeremy Henderson had it on War Eagle Reader for a while. I remember there's a picture floating around. I remember seeing it on the roof of one of the ticket office buildings or something over there. It said, "It won't happen, Ray Perkins, 1984," or whatever. "It happened, you know, 1989.
And they had said for years, it'll never happen.
Yeah, never happen. They threatened to end the series rather than come to Auburn and play us there.
Mm-hmm. People don't realize this, but Auburn and Alabama haven't played the same number of times as Auburn, Georgia, for example, because the Auburn-Alabama rivalry ended for a long time, like in the 20s and 30s, I believe, because of a dispute about officiating and where we were going to play and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the rivalry was so bitter they couldn't agree on these kind of fundamental rules about the games and how they were going to be played that we haven't played them nearly as many times as we've played teams like Georgia.
That's right. So the game played out. They actually had the lead for a while, which was disconcerting, and we were very worried and all. But we broke it open. I believe we broke it open with like Reggie Slack going to Alexander Wright. The passing game kind of broke it open. Of course, Pat Dye wants to establish the run first, and that wasn't working great. And so I feel like we trailed at halftime, maybe like 14 to 10 or something. We had them down like 27 to 14. That was it. We had them down like 27 to 10 or 27 to 14. They came back, made it 27 to 20. And now we're starting to get a little bit nervous. There's just a couple of minutes left in the game. It's 27 to 20. We're all having nightmares that what if they come down and score again and tie it or go for two and win or who knows what. It could slip through our fingers here at the end, and then we go out and Win Lyle kicks a long field goal to make it 30-20, and that pretty much, by putting it up two scores, that pretty much meant that it was the deal was done, you know, and that's how it ended, 30-20.
Alabama was going to beat us. Where are you now?
And, you know, there'd been some concern if Alabama wins, what'll happen at Toomer's Corner. There were people that vowed to, you know, fight to the death to defend the trees from Alabama throwing toilet paper. Didn't prove to be a problem. Alabama are masters. If there's one thing Alabama's good at, it's being out of an away game stadium in the fourth quarter when they're losing. They know when to hit the on-ramp onto the highway. And so by the time that game was over, I don't think I saw any Alabama fans on the way to Toomer's Corner. And that was the first time I can remember Toomer's Corner looking like a snowstorm from one end of College Street to the other.
Yes.
And up and down Magnolia, too.
It seemed like the whole town was covered in toilet paper.
The whole town, yeah. I mean, again, I know they do things now, but this was, you know, up until this, you rolled the trees. Those two trees, that was it.
Yeah.
This was the game. People rolled if you stood still too long, somebody might roll you. It was everybody and everything was getting rolled. It was just an ocean of toilet paper all over the place. And so we had won 30-20. And by the way, the reason we always refer to this as like in quotation marks, first time ever, is that was what was on the tickets. That Phil Neal had done the special Aubie drawing just for this game of Aubie rolling out the red carpet that said "Welcome Bama" and it said "First time ever in Auburn." I was always sad though, as students, we didn't get those tickets.
Nope.
We had the little student one ticket that you punched a hole in, and I've still got mine. I think it actually says like "First time ever" in tiny little letters on that square, but it's not the same as that as having that big ticket. So
the only other thing I want to say about this game and this is one of the best nicknames of any Auburn player was on this team. Mm-hmm. And that was a running back, a young running back that got a bunch of playing time down the stretch and made a bunch of big plays against Georgia and Alabama. And that was Daryl Electron Williams.
Yes. Yes.
There were many stars today. This was one as part of a team effort. But perhaps the icing on the cake was Auburn's final touchdown by the freshman from Pritchard, Alabama, Daryl Electron Williams. Second and nine at the Bama 12. One running back is Electron Williams behind Reggie Slack. He'll toss sweep. Williams to the short side. He's at the 10. He's at the 5. He's in! Touchdown! On to a 30-20 victory over the Alabama Crimson Tide. Hello again, everybody. I'm Jim Fife with Charlie Trotman. Back at Jordan-Hare Stadium, the scene of the first on-campus game between the two arch rivals after 54 years. Second-ranked Alabama came undefeated to Auburn today for the first time, and the Auburn Tigers came back from a 10-7 halftime deficit and win it in the second half impressively, 30-20 over their arch rivals. Charlie, I don't think a single Auburn fan has left this stadium.
Well, it's definitely a jubilant atmosphere, Jim, and the Auburn fans, I think, first of all, were excited to have Alabama here playing in Auburn for the first time and to play this well against an Alabama team that is truly outstanding and has so many weapons. I think it really has excited this crowd, and they're showing their appreciation for the effort today because they're still in the stands cheering, and they want the players and the coaches, the administration, everybody to know that they appreciate what has taken place at Auburn.
What a victory this is. This ranks right up there with the biggest of all.
Not the linebacker. This was no. The running back. I love how he was... It even had the apostrophe L, Daryl Electron. He wasn't Daryl Electron. He was Daryl Electron. Yeah, he bounced around like a subatomic particle. He did score, didn't he?
He did score down in the Alabama game.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think later maybe he – I don't remember what happened to him. Did he get hurt or something? Or his career didn't end big. I remember that. He kind of faded away, but he scored.
No, I think he had some injuries.
But he scored in the biggest game he could have played in, and that's what mattered. So,
welcome. One for the ages. The first ever at Auburn yesterday, and Auburn beat Alabama 30-20, and Pat Dye took his place alongside Nealon and Bryant and Dooley with three straight conference championships.
You know, I'm not...
Congratulations.
I'm not believing what I just looked at on the screen.
That was amazing, wasn't it?
I'm going to tell you something. There's some things about life that you can't. But it's been 50 years since there was three champions in the Southeastern Conference. The last year was 1939. Our stadium is 50 years old. I'm 50 years old, and I just looked at the screen, and the score was 30-20, a total of 50. It's absolutely amazing. You know, maybe Alabama didn't have a chance after all when they
came. And Auburn played in the Cotton Bowl and the Sugar Bowl's 50th anniversaries.
Well, maybe 50 is supposed to be a special year. I bet it has been a great year for our football team. And the things that this football team has gone through, I talked about it a little bit in the dressing room, but it's been one of the most satisfying years that I've ever been, and I know I got a kick out of, you know, through the course of the year fussing at our people a little bit about the way they got on our team. And
but they brought it home yesterday, didn't they?
Well, yesterday is I've been coaching the rest of my life, and I won't ever witness anything like yesterday. And anybody that's on that field that was a player from Auburn or a player from Alabama, and you can talk about a home field advantage if you want to, but what happened yesterday at Auburn lifted our players another level, and there's no question that our fans had a lot to do with that coming to the ball game yesterday.
Well, so we got that win. We were 9-2. and we weren't going to go to the Sugar Bowl. Alabama got – it was funny because that put us in a three-way tie. I can't remember another three-way tie for the SEC. Tennessee had beaten us. We beat Alabama. Alabama beat Tennessee. So it was a – they all we all had one conference loss, and we all had beaten each other. And so Alabama got to go to the Sugar Bowl and play Miami, where they lost, and that was the last time we saw Bill Curry as an Alabama coach. Tennessee, I forgot where they went. They were 11-1. Who beat them that year? Alabama. That was the only game. I didn't realize that the only game Tennessee lost that year was that Alabama game. They were 11-1, so they must have won their bowl. So I don't feel too bad losing to that Tennessee team in a 7-point game on the road, you know?
Nope.
So we ended up 10-2, just like Alabama. We went to the Hall of Fame Bowl when that was a big bowl. I mean, it was a New Year's Day, up and coming. The Hall of Fame Bowl in 1989 was about what like the Citrus Bowl or the Capital One Bowl would be, you know, in later years.
I think it ended up turning into the Citrus Bowl, or one of those bowls,
something like that. Yeah, and so they were calling it the Fame Game, I remember, and that was the game where we played Ohio State, and Ohio State was with John Cooper, I think. And they were beating us in the first half, and they put a lick on Stacy Danley.
Flat out ball, and there is the biggest hit maybe of the 1989-90 bowl season. Danley down as he was struck by Zach Dumas.
Zach Dumas, a fellow that came to this university as a running back and said, you know, I don't like to get hit. What I like to do is hit people. And he put a knockout blow on Danley that time.
Hardest tackle I've seen in years.
You see this ball now? He's going to get hit just about the time that ball hits his hands. Dumas just unloads on him.
And I remember that hit was just gigantic.
Gigantic. They just floored him. And I remember Pat Dye telling Danley, get up and run off the field. And so Danley, I think, said later, I may be wrong about this, but I feel like Danley said later he didn't know who he was or where he was, but he got up and ran off the field because he didn't want to look bad to the Ohio State players.
And now let's go back down to Jim Donovan.
All right, thank you very much, Don. But John Cooper, you hate to give up one late like that, but your team played very well in the first half.
We played real hard. Our kicking game really caused us some problems. I think we had a couple guys in position. You got to make the tackle. This is a good football team we're playing.
I'll tell you what, it was important for Greg Fry to come out of the chute quickly, and he did.
Well, Greg's a good football player. You give him time, he's going to throw the ball. And how about Jeff Graham? He can catch it, can't he?
All right, he certainly can. Congratulations on a good first half. Now go in there and get going in the second half.
Thank you very much.
John Cooper, his Buckeyes are up 14-10. Thank you, Don, along with Pat Dye, really helped out by your return game, as you've got some big returns there that set up your late touchdown and got you right back in it.
Well, I thought that because Ohio State started out fast, and they're about like I expected them to be. I knew they were a good football team, and you know, we've moved the ball on them a little bit. We've turned it over a couple of times, and they've done a good job against us, but the two returns helped us, and we got that one in right before the half, and we played a lot of people, and hopefully we'll be fresh enough to make a run at it this second half.
All right, good luck, Coach.
Thank you very much.
All right, Pat Dye, head coach of the Auburn Tigers, ready to go here in the second half. Let's go back upstairs to Don and Amon.
So Coach Dye, with victory in hand, a sixth straight victory to conclude a 10-2 season, goes over to shake the hand of John Cooper. They must have visited for about a half hour on the field well before the game. That'll do it. The final gun sounds with the Auburn Tigers, the victor in the 1990 Hall of Fame Bowl, 31-14.
And after that, we turned it on in the second half and beat them 31-14. And beating Ohio State 31-14 is a nice feeling.
Yes.
And but as a footnote to that, during NBC's broadcast of that game, the reporter went up in the audience and interviewed one Twelita Ramsey, Eric Ramsey's wife. He was a defensive back on the team, and we didn't know anything bad at that point. She talked about her son being named Eric Ahmad Rashad Ramsey, I believe. And maybe Ahmad Rashad was doing the color commentary or something, and maybe that's why they brought it up and did it in the first place. But in any case, that was our first experience with Mrs. Ramsey, and it would not be our last. And so even as we are celebrating this monumental win over Alabama and then beating Ohio State in the Hall of Fame Bowl. The 1980s officially came to an end the day before we played Ohio State. And that win over Ohio State happened on January 1st, 1990. But really, it's the end of the 80s. It's interesting to note that the 80s were our decade. And that Iron Bowl, the first time ever game, was the last Auburn game we ever played in the 1980s. And it's a fine way to go out. We started the 90s off beating Ohio State. But unfortunately, the cracks are going to start to show. The dam's going to start leaking a little bit. 1990 was still respectable. So 90 loomed ahead of us as, I think somebody even had us ranked number one, like Sporting News or something. But what do you, when you look back at 1990 now, and what do you think about it?
When I look back at 1990, I think about maybe the beginning of the end of the die era, like the we're in the downhill part of the die era. And also there's two games that stick in my mind from the 90s, and they're both losses from 1990. One is a game at Florida. Steve Spurrier was the brand new Florida coach.
Good gosh.
And we played them in Gainesville. And I remember I went with my wife's family, went over to somebody else's house because they didn't have ESPN, and we watched the game on ESPN. And Auburn had an old-school SEC defense, a bunch of bigger, heavier, slower guys. And this was the very first kind of iteration of the Spurrier fun-and-gun offense. So think about, you know, in modern terms, like a Big 12 kind of air raid kind of offense against a bigger, older, slower defense. And they absolutely shredded us in that game. I mean, it was a complete annihilation. It was 48-7, and honestly, it didn't feel that close from an Auburn fan perspective.
No.
And that was when we were like, wow. You know, it was like, who is this guy? And that was like it looked like the future of football against the past of football.
It really did.
So well, we come back from that game and come home the next week after getting just curb stomped at Florida, and we play Southern Miss with a little quarterback named Brett Favre.
Maybe you've heard of him.
Maybe you've heard of him. They had a wide receiver named Michael Jackson, who was a high draft pick, and a running back. I think his name was Tony Smith, who got drafted. Mm-hmm. And this was the year, if you haven't heard the story, Favre was in an offseason car accident and was injured badly, lost a couple inches of intestines and stuff, and had surgery and worked his way back to being able to practice in the fall. And in that year, 1990, Southern Miss beat both Auburn and Alabama with Favre at quarterback.
Wow.
And we lost to them 13-12 in one of the most frustrating games I remember. But they had some really good players. And we, I think, were kind of in a shell-shocked hungover state from that Florida ass-kicking the week before.
Yes. You know, I look at 1990, and it really is a tale of two seasons. And I think it's kind of like it's the watershed moment. Because going into it, we thought, hey, the good times just keep on rolling, right? We had a great 86, 87, 88, 89. We're going to keep it rolling, baby. Let it roll. Let it ride. And we came out and had big wins against Cal State, Florida, and Ole Miss. Now, number 5, Tennessee came to town to battle. Number 3, Auburn. Number 5, Tennessee. That game stands out in my mind because we had to fight back from a deep deficit. This was Stan White as a freshman, our starter this year. They had to decide who was going to be our quarterback, and they put aside some of the older upperclassmen and let true freshman Stan White, who would go on to be the only 4-year starting quarterback in Auburn history. Stan comes in and starts for us, and he brought us back with his passing to tie Tennessee 26-26. We used to tie Tennessee every other year. And I never forget, Tennessee came down and had a chance to kick a field goal to win, and the kicker missed. And like his own players were throwing stuff at him on the sidelines. So we would call that a 26-26 win. You know how some ties are a loss and some are a win. And that was a tactical win, really. So we were still undefeated. And that's how we got all the way up to, we were ranked number 2 when we beat Mississippi State on October 27th. So after 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, after 7 games, we were 6-0-1 and ranked number 2 in the country. And then we have this narrow win over Mississippi State. We dropped to number 4 somehow. And that's when the shellacking at Florida happened. I was at that game. And that was just not a pleasant trip.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we were sitting so far down you couldn't see the field. It's a crown field, and it's low down in the ground. And we were basically on the first row with the cheerleaders and the Auburn, you know, the War Eagle girls and Plainsmen. And we saw Stan throw that first touchdown to go up 7-0, I think, to Herb Casey, the weapon. And then after that, it was a 48-0 shellacking. And then, like you said, the Southern Miss game, you covered that very well. We came back and we beat Georgia pretty solidly, 33-10. But understand, we then go and lose in Birmingham. I was at this game, too. We go and lose in Birmingham to Alabama, 16-7, which meant that after starting 6-0-1 and being ranked number 2 in the country, we lost 3 of our last 4 games. So it really was a tale of 2 seasons. We started really well, and it was like the opposite of 89, right? The 89 team lost 2 games early on the road and then came back and hammered it out in the second half of the season. This team collapsed in the second half of the season and ended up finishing, we ended up 7-3-1 at that point. And then we go to the Peach Bowl, which is a game you were at, where we played Indiana with their great running back and barely managed to get a win there.
And it was the old Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, and it was muddy and rainy outdoor game in Atlanta in December. Mm-hmm. And they had a really good running back, Anthony Thompson.
Thompson, yeah.
He was one of the leading rushers in college football history, whatever, at the time. And we beat them, but it wasn't a great game.
Indiana leads Auburn 23-20 with 43 seconds left in the 23rd Peach Bowl game. And Auburn's got the ball 1 foot away from a possible victory.
Well, anybody who thinks that Pat Dye likes to go for the tie, well, he's not going for the tie. He's going for the win.
Auburn huddled up outside the 5-yard line. Here's your ball game. Meeks up to the firing line is over the ball at center. Auburn's got a slot formation to the right, a wing back to the right, one setback. White calls his play, motion by Herbert Casey back toward the football. White's going to roll out on the bootleg, got running room. White dives for the end zone. He's in! Touchdown, Auburn! Stan White on the naked bootleg. Fake to pitch to the right, roll to the left. Nothing but green grass ahead of him. And Auburn has gone ahead by the score of 26-23.
I want to step back in the middle of the season for a second and refer to the Florida State game.
That's the one I was going to say. That's the one we haven't mentioned at all, and we've got to talk about October 20th, number 5 Auburn, number 7 Florida State. Take it away.
So it was, again, a night game on ESPN in Auburn. Florida State comes to Auburn at night, and it was a great crowd.
We hadn't beaten them in 3 years.
We hadn't beaten them in years. We had all these bitter feelings towards them from the last couple of games, the Sugar Bowl and the game in Tallahassee and stuff. And earlier in Auburn a couple years previous where they had crushed us. And so we had a lot of feelings for Florida State, and we really wanted to beat them.
4th and 5.5 at Auburn 37. 1:10 to play. We're tied at 17 apiece. Everybody is on their feet in this stadium. 10,000-12,000 for Florida State, the rest of them for Auburn. But this game is a long way from being over with still 1:10 to play. But Auburn's cue now is to stop this potent Florida State attack. Split back for Casey Weldon, slot formation near side. Ball on the left hash mark, over the ball is Robbie Baker, the center. Weldon reaches under, takes the snap. Back to throw is Weldon. Weldon chased out of pocket. He's hit. He stumbles. He falls down deep in his own territory. Back at the 41-yard line.
And, Jim, the big play is that Auburn's now only 1 first down from their own field goal attempt.
4th down and 8 yards to go. Stan White in from the sidelines has called his play. And here's that double wing. Joseph is the setback. All or nothing here for White. Throws over the middle. Great catch by Casey for the first down inside the 20. They threw over the middle. First down, Auburn, inside the 20-yard line. 31 seconds to go.
Great catch by Herb Casey.
I can't stand it.
Great catch by Herb Casey. Great throw by Stan White. Pressure throw. Great protection, Jim. Give credit to the offensive line, Stan White. Nobody in his face.
They'll put the tee down at about the 28, so it'll be a 38-yard attempt. He had a 37-yarder earlier. He has kicked from 48 yards, as Charlie told you.
The ball is about 6 or 8 yards in from the right hash mark. There is a crosswind from right to left. Dickinson waits. There's the snap. The kick is away by Von Weil. The kick is good! It's good! It's good! Von Weil! It's good! 2 seconds to go! 20-17! How about that kid from Akron, Ohio?
And it was a great crowd, and the team played very well that night. And I just remember at the end of that game, the Auburn fans did the chop back at the Florida State fans, and they ran out of that stadium so fast.
They
like,
were
shocked. We were so mad at them.
They were scandalized that we would even do that. they wrote letters to the editor of the Plainsman the next week. We were worried for our safety. Those horrible Auburn fans were doing the tomahawk chop back at us. It's not fun having the tomahawk chop done at you. Well, no kidding. And they're like, they were all like all clutching their pearls, all wrought up about it. And we're like, you know, join the SEC and you'll get this every week, you bunch of ninnies.
But it was also like, again, this was 1990, and their chant was so freaking annoying, and we had to just sit there and endure it for game after game after game, that it was a night game, and at the end of it, when we won, we just wanted a way to stick it to them and stick it back to them. So the whole stadium kind of did it back to them, like, nah, 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 you're nothing. Here's your chant. And it was great. It was a really fun time.
It was. That game was Florida State leading for a while. And we had some plays to come back and scored late to make it 17-17. And this was another one of Pat Dye's infamous ties. We'd already tied once that year against Tennessee, so we would have actually had two ties in our first six games. And we went for the extra point because Dye said, I felt like we could get the ball back and score. And I'm thinking, well, then what difference does it make if we're behind by one or tied or up by one? But anyway, we did. Florida State got over on our side of the field in the waning moments, and it looked like they were going to set up to kick a field goal to beat us. And their quarterback dropped back. I don't remember if it was Peter Tom Willis or
Casey Weldon, maybe?
Casey Weldon, yeah, one of them. Dropped back, and he dropped back some more, and our guys started chasing him around, and then he trips over his own feet and stumbles backward like another 10 feet. He started that play at like Auburn's 35, and he ends it at like Florida State's 35. You remember that?
Mm-hmm. Like he lost like 20 yards. That was great.
And he didn't even get touched. He just sacked himself for like a 30-yard loss as we chased him around. I mean, he would have gotten touched if he hadn't fallen down, but you know what I mean. He was trying to get away, and he stumbled, and he just kept stumbling and stumbling and stumbling, and then finally hit the ground. And I remember, you know, Jim Fife going crazy. You know, that we've now we have the chance to kick the field goal. And so a couple of plays later, Jim Von Weil comes out and hits that field goal to beat them 20-17 and end 3 years of frustration. And it felt very much like that 87 Florida game where we'd lost to them 3 years in a row and we finally, you know, got the big revenge. And so we got the revenge. And I remember doing the tomahawk chop forever, but I also remember, like, we were sitting on our seats there around the 30-yard line in the lower section. And I just remember everybody in that section, we were all hugging each other at once, and we all, like, fell down two steps. Like, yeah. The whole scrum goes kaboom, kaboom, down two steps because we were all losing our balance. But we were all in a big scrum, so it didn't matter. We just kind of, like, fell, you know. But that was an amazing, amazing game. And it really ended up being the highlight, I think, of that year.
100%.
Yeah. So, but after 90, I don't have a whole lot to say about 91 and 92. The highlight of 91 was going to Texas and beating them. But it wasn't a very good Texas team. But still, getting a win over Texas is always good. But after that, the wheels really came off. We lost at Tennessee. We lost to Southern Miss again. We barely beat Vanderbilt. We lost to Mississippi State. We lost to Florida again. After that, this is amazing. We won our opening game against Georgia Southern. We beat Ole Miss, and we went to Texas and won. We were 3-0 and ranked 13th in the country. After three games that season and being 13 in the country, we only won two more games the rest of the season, and they were at Vanderbilt and Southwest Louisiana. We lost to Tennessee, Southern Miss, Mississippi State, Florida, Georgia, and another Legion Field loss. to Alabama, and we ended 5-6. And what did you think about 91? I was actually still there. I was in the education graduate school that summer, so I was still around, and I remember just feeling like, what has happened? What did you think about that year?
It was a tough season. Auburn, we had lost a bunch of talent from the last of the great, of really great players from the 88, 89 teams were gone.
Yeah.
And the team wasn't the same. And I think some of our rivals had gotten better. I mean, Florida in particular, but also I think Alabama. And we took a real step back, especially, I mean, defensively, but offensively too. Like defensively, we were really, really sliding down the stage, but we did not have the great difference makers on offense like we had had in the years past.
That's right. And did you think Pat Dye could still salvage it and turn it around again, or were you thinking maybe this was it? And this is 91. We still had 92 to go.
No, I mean, at the time, my idea was like, he's won the SEC a couple times in a row. Like, it's not, he had a bad year. We'll get it back.
Right. Yeah. We brought in Tommy Bowden as our offensive coordinator, by the way. Pat Sullivan had gone off to be, I think, coach at like TCU or something at that point. And we still had Wayne Hall as the defensive coordinator. You felt like we had coaches that knew what they were doing, so maybe we could turn it around. Well, we'll wrap up this episode with a look at 92 and the end of the Pat Dye era. The
last thing I want to say about 91 is we had started in 89, obviously, we'd started the home-and-home series with Alabama, the back and forth. But Auburn had to give away the 91 home game as the price to pay for the deal. And so the 91 home game was still in Birmingham, even though it was Auburn's home game.
And I was at that game, too. And Legion Field, because 91 was an Auburn home game, even though it was in Birmingham, they had abandoned any pretense of dividing that stadium in half at this point. And so I'll never forget Legion Field with a big AU on the 50-yard line, which is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in my life. They had the big AU on the 50-yard line, and they were trying so hard to make the scoreboard look like orange and blue, and it just couldn't. It looked like kind of a pink and purple or something. They just didn't have orange and blue on the Alabama. That's another indictment of Legion Field, is that it could do Alabama stuff great, but it literally was physically incapable of being an Auburn scoreboard. and it's that artificial turf and that nasty, terrible stadium. And it was just incredibly uncomfortable to be in that stadium pretending it was an Auburn home game. It was not good. In fact, I wanted to tell you that the attendance in that game was 83,091, which is capacity. But I imagine, even though it was an Auburn home game, I imagine a lot of that crowd was still Alabama. And they probably were as bemused as me with a big AU on the middle of the field. All right, so the last one is 92, and this is Pat Dye's swan song. On a personal level, we got to point out, you and I at this point were off in Washington, D.C. We were going to Georgetown. We were watching these games in restaurants and bars and at your house or whatever, wherever we could find a TV that could have it. And it was hard to be away and try to keep track of the end of the Dye era and what Auburn was doing when we weren't able to really be there. Probably the thing I missed the most that we didn't get to see was that they retired Bo's jersey, I believe, at the Arkansas game that year. And that was a 24-24 tie. So to wrap, the 92 season, you knew things weren't going to go well. We started out losing on the road to Ole Miss 45-21. Anytime you let Ole Miss ring you up for a... this was an Ole Miss team that had finished last in the SEC the year before, and they rang us up 45-21. We beat Samford, which was interesting given that we would be playing... that we'd be hiring Terry Bowden soon. We beat them 55-0. We actually had a miraculous 30-28 win over LSU. I remember that was the game that you and I watched at like a restaurant in Arlington or something, and the Auburn Club, where I believe Stan White hit a long pass for the winning touchdown at the end, something like that.
This wasn't the interception game, right?
No. That's still a couple years away. This was one where we hit a long pass to beat them 30-28. We finally got a win over Southern Miss. Wow, we beat Southern Miss. Woohoo! And we beat Vanderbilt. And so at this point, we were actually 4-1 and feeling like, hey, you know, maybe it's not going to be so bad. Then we go lose to Mississippi State. We lose at Florida. And the only game we win the rest of the year is Southwestern Louisiana, 25-24. on homecoming. Ugh. We have a tie with Arkansas in their first year in the conference. And then we lose 14-10 to Georgia and 17-0 to Alabama. And at that point, Pat Dye's health had been pretty bad. This was, by the way, an Alabama national championship year, their first in many years with Gene Stallings in his third year. And so Dye's health is bad. We are 5-5-1, another five-win season like the last season. We end up next to last in the SEC West. And Dye announced his – did he announce his retirement before the Iron Bowl?
I'm not sure, but also the specter of the NCAA was swirling.
Yes, that's right.
You mentioned the Ramseys earlier, and he had provided information to the NCAA that a coach had bought him steaks and other things, and Auburn was put on probation for 93 and 94 because of improper benefits. And that was that combined with the kind of downhill slide and the performance of the team helped end the Dye era.
Coach, any final thoughts as you walk off the field for the last time in 12 years?
You know, I wish we could have made a better game of it. But, you know, they just had a few too many weapons and a little too much ability for us on defense. But I really think I felt like they might be the best team in the country coming in, and after watching them here today, that defensively, I don't believe I've ever seen a better defensive football team that can run and as much talent in the secondary and speed they got. So they, you know, if they could throw the football a little better, then, you know, they would be. But they're a great football team.
Coaches,
I'm mighty proud of our kids. And, you know, we were in the football game till the interception, and then we just couldn't get anything going offensively. And we didn't give ourselves a chance down the stretch.
Coach, it's been a great 12 years. Enjoy your hunting.
Yeah, thank you very much. And, you know, I hate for it to go out like this, but I don't guess when you get out of it, and you've been in it as long as I have. I've been playing or coaching since 1952, and I guess you're never ready, but it's got to end sometime.
Good luck to you in the future, Coach.
Thank you very much.
And so with the end of the 92 season, Pat Dye's 12-year run is over. He had won the SEC in 83, 87, 88, 89, and had very near misses in 86 and 84 and honestly in 82, really. The only really bad seasons were the first one and then the last two. So 9 out of his 12 years were really good seasons and championship seasons. We got Alabama in Auburn for the first time ever. I mean, when you look back at the Pat Dye era now, let's kind of sum it up, and we'll end with that. What did Pat Dye mean to Auburn, and how should we remember him and his era now?
I think he took Auburn and made it back into a perennial SEC contender where it had fallen away from that, and made it into a team that was known around the country for great running game and tough defense, tough, hard-nosed defense.
Yeah.
And that is what I think people think about the Pat Dye teams. And that was what was the key to their success for a long time, for much of that period. I think at the same time, like we talked about with the Spurrier thing, towards the end, like football was changing. The kind of style of players that were successful in the mid-80s weren't going to be successful in the 90s. Mm-hmm. You had to have different types of athletes, faster players, and different schemes. And so I think that was part of it. But also I think – you know, there's a bitter taste in the end of everybody's mouth because it ended, you know, with two poor seasons and with NCAA sanctions.
Yeah, so. That's right. Yeah, Pat Dye football is really run and stop the run. And in the 80s in the SEC, you could win championships running and stopping the run. But Miami had been showing us that you could pass the ball and win championships too. And by the 90s, with Steve Spurrier at Florida, it was clear that the page had turned. And if you stop the run, they'll just throw over your heads. The other big team in the 80s that did what we did, really, was Oklahoma. And it was the same thing. Oklahoma would be killing their conference, and then they'd play Miami and get killed because of the pass. So we had expanded in 86 to be a more of a passing team. But still, it was our second thing. It was not our primary thing. And Steve Spurrier changed football in 1990 with that fun and gun at Florida, and through the rest of the 90s, he would terrorize We'll talk in our next episode about a couple of games where it didn't work out for him, because we beat Florida at least as much as anybody did during those Spurrier years, which drove him nuts. But for now, the 80s were an amazing decade, and I'm really happy that I was a part of it. I was down there. I'm glad that you were there, too, and we had a good time, didn't we?
We did. We loved it. It was wonderful.
It was a great time to be there. It was a great time to be an Auburn student. It was a great time to be an Auburn fan, and it was a great decade. And so while the Pat Dye era didn't exactly end on the high note we might have wished for, we had 12 amazing years to look back on, and of course later we would actually name the field in Jordan-Hare Stadium Pat Dye Field. And meanwhile, 1993 was right around the corner, and nobody could have guessed who we would have as our new head coach, and nobody could have ever dreamed that just a few months later, Jim Fife would be saying these magic words.
11-0! 11-0! 11-0!
We Believed is a production of the AU Wishbone and White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareaglereader.com. I'm Reynolds Wolf. The show was produced and engineered by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer, and brought to you by all of our great supporters on Patreon.com. To join the AU Wishbone family, visit auwishbone.com. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
This is Van. Thanks for listening, everybody. I really hope you guys are enjoying these shows. I've been working very, very hard to put them together after John and I have recorded hours of conversation about them, and I've gone out and gotten these interviews with all the different folks, and I'm hoping to have new folks for new interviews in the remaining six episodes as we move into the 1990s and beyond. These shows would not exist, though, without the support of our great patrons who keep our programs going and keep them on the air. And that's why I'm putting them, that's the main reason I'm creating the shows, and it's why I put them up for about 2, 3, 4 weeks in advance on the Patreon site so that those folks get to hear the shows first. If you want to join their ranks and hear these shows early, just go to www.auwishbone.com and click through to become a patron and help support the shows, and you'll get to hear them way before anybody else does. And that's for just as little as $1 a month. I have to thank the folks who are currently our patrons. That includes, of course, Brendan O'Dwyer, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, Carl Von Drunker, and Phil Amthor, along with Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Johnny Caldwell, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, Theodore Gary, Shannon Butson, Taylor, David Hegler, Mickey B., Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vijakana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, and our one-time and anonymous donors. All of you guys and girls out there, we absolutely appreciate you. We couldn't do it without you. Those of you that are not currently patrons, think about joining up. You get lots and lots of benefits in addition to getting to hear these shows early. Again, just go to www.auwishbone.com, and we will see you for Episode 5 in just a few weeks, where we get to the 1990s and the 11-0 game. War Eagle.